Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, the Ireland men's rugby sevens will take on New Zealand this afternoon in their final pool fixture. The team got off to the perfect start at the Olympics yesterday, winning their first two matches against South Africa and Japan in Stade de France. For all of this and the very latest from Paris, I'm joined on the line by Damien O'Mara from RTE Sport. Of the two rugby matches that I could have watched yesterday afternoon, I watched the wrong one when I watched the Japanese match. Was the South African one a good performance?
I would say it was a nervous performance, and I think the players, well, they fairly openly acknowledged it afterwards. To put it into context, Japan aren't part of the World Series, and Ireland would have been expected to have beaten them and beaten them with relative ease. The South Africa game was the one that was the potential banana skin, and it was the opening game, and this is a group of players that have qualified for the Olympics in June of last year. The seven of them were in Tokyo, but it was a completely surreal experience playing in a 60,000 capacity stadium that was empty aside from the media that were there. So there were a little bit of nerves. They got over the line. Had they been beaten by South Africa, it would have completely distorted the route that they want to follow to the knockout stages. So listen, they're up and running. And Philip, we can't ignore the fact that this is a group of, you know, 12 players plus the standby players plus the coaching staff who've been in the village for the last couple of weeks. And they are the first Irish into action. And that comes with a pressure of expectation, very often self-imposed, but I think they would have slept well in their beds last night, relieved as much as anything else.
So what's going to be the strategy against the All Blacks then today? Do they go for broke here, or do they think, no, hang on a second, let's just sit back, we're going to get out of this pool?
They have been very bullish about their desire to win a medal and their belief that they can win a medal. And very often people like myself and yourself and other members of the media get criticised for foisting unrealistic expectations on people by chatting about medals. This is a group that have finished second in the World Series. They are here and they believe that they are going to medal. And if they want to medal, I won't say it's crucial, but it's preferable to top the group. So a victory over New Zealand today would see them do that. There's eight teams, obviously, will qualify for the quarterfinals. Were Ireland to top their group, they would play the eighth seeded team. So it would be one of the two teams who have finished third in one of the other groups. If they finish second in the group, so if they're beaten by New Zealand or if they draw with New Zealand today, the likelihood is they would face, well, the reality is they would face Fiji, who are the back-to-back gold medal champions, or France, who have the weight of the entire nation and the support of the entire nation behind them. So you want to win the group to avoid Fiji and France for various reasons.
All right. There are calls in Australia today for one of their swimming coaches to be expelled from their delegation after he expressed the view in an interview that he hoped a Korean swimmer would win the men's 400-metre freestyle final.
Yeah, so I'll paint you the picture. We're in the beautiful gulf between athletes and media arriving and the games getting underway. And there's a lot of people are very accessible to the media. There are others who just decide to hide in the village and not take part in anything. But one of the Australian swimming coaches has done an interview during which he expressed not even his hope, but his wish that one of the South Korean swimmers, Kim Woo Min, will win the men's 400 metres freestyle. Now, you might say that's all very magnanimous of this nice Australian man to be wishing the Olympics spirit of success to his South Korean friend. But then when you delve into it, Australia have the current long course world champion and Commonwealth Games world champion in the same competition. So there's now a furore has broken out that why is this guy, Michael Palfrey, why is he going on television and doing media interviews saying, listen, I hope the Korean lad wins at the weekend when his own man is in the corner? So obviously has gone down like a lead balloon, quite understandably, in Australia. And there are suggestions now that perhaps the best thing for all involved is let's not have this man as part of the delegation. So we'll wait and see how that plays out over the coming days.
This continued fallout over that video of the dressage rider from GB, Charlotte Dujardin, apparently whipping a horse 24 times. And the suggestion of the feeling is now that this, emerging when it has placed the future of all equitation events at the Olympics under some doubt.
Yeah, so the whistleblower who released the tape, and you and I alluded to this when we were discussing earlier in the week, that this is a video that was recorded, by all accounts, 4 years ago, and how coincidental it is that it was released in the week that Charlotte Desjardins was aiming to become Britain's level most medalled. Mm-hmm.
I think she disputes that it was 4 years ago, but she says it was certainly a number of years ago.
Yes, exactly. Now, and
but it has been sitting in somebody's phone waiting for this moment for some time.
Yeah, and we alluded, well, certainly I alluded during the week to the suggestion that it was a story that might have other chapters to tell. I think, and there's this feeling when you speak to people who would be a little bit closer to the British delegation, that when they were told initially of a video, that there might have been some level of confusion around what the video was. So perhaps could there be more videos to emerge? I'm not 100% sure. But the problem here is... equestrian sport, you know, you touched on it with Barry Kenny during the week when you were chatting about breaking and rock climbing and BMXing and skateboarding. We are now living in the social media age of instant gratification. And if something doesn't fit onto a TikTok or fit onto a social media reel, you're going to lose a significant chunk of your audience. And the future of television viewing and media consumption is the teenage generation who are obsessed with their phones now. The equestrian sports don't really tend to lend themselves to that. I think the eventing, the cross-country sports, there's a little bit of, you know,
there's thrills and spills, but the difference between horse A and horse B doing a half pass in a dressage arena is really, really hard for the non-expert to see any difference between.
100%. And the whistleblower who has released this video has said through their solicitor that they have done so in order to save dressage. I think the reality is that they have given people who might want to make a decision about the future of sports such as dressage at events like this an opportunity to say, well, perhaps maybe it's time for us to move on. Maybe it's time for us to modernise. Maybe it's time that these sports are no longer a part of what it is the Olympic Games want to be. Mm. And I do think there's a crossroads here. Like, we look at modern pentathlon, and obviously there was a situation, there were a couple of controversies involving the jumping aspect of modern pentathlon from both the Rio and Tokyo Games. We had an incident after Tokyo of, you know, one of the horses who are randomly allocated to the competitors being punched. And, you know, there has been a complete reformatting of the competition for modern pentathlon for Paris, where it is now going to be run off in the course of 90 minutes or 2 hours to make it, you know, quick and energetic and that bit more perilous for those involved across the multiple disciplines. And the point is made over here by, you know, you meet people here who are so dedicated to the Olympics and are so invested in the Olympic heritage. And Pierre de Coubertin, who is the father of the modern Olympics, modern pentathlon is the only event, or certainly... there may have been some distortion of an event which has been introduced in Paris and Tokyo, but modern pentathlon for so many years was the only event which was specifically invented and created for the Olympics because it represented all that was required of the ideal soldier. And there's a lot of people think it was a real landmark moment for, you know, the IOC to tinker with modern pentathlon, but... yeah, I think there are sports of that ilk that are now at a really significant crossroads.
There's an unsavoury story which is just not going away, Damien, about a Dutch athlete who served a prison sentence for raping a 12-year-old. He's in the national team. He might not be in most teams due to safeguarding restrictions. How is that being played out over there?
This is, so to explain, we're in a situation where there are daily press conferences, and an awful lot of the bigger Olympic federations will put out press representatives. And it is an issue which has come up on a number of these conversations over the course of the week. So the individual involved is one of the beach volleyball players, Stephen van der Velde. He's 29 years old at the moment. He was convicted, as you mentioned, after meeting a girl on social media in August of 2014. When he was then 19, he travelled to the UK. He was sentenced to a prison term. He served a reduced sentence. He is here. Now, there are two arguments which take place here. One is he was convicted of his crime. He served an element of the prison sentence, and does there need to be a place in life for people to be allowed to rehabilitate themselves and live their life afterwards? The other issue is that there are, you know, obviously there are certain crimes that need to be treated differently. It is a question that has been asked of a number of the big delegations as you go along, and there are very mixed messages coming back, very mixed suggestions coming back. A number of the federations, as you've alluded to there, would simply say, as a matter of safeguarding and the protection of athletes that are we're here and in circumstances where there are athletes that are still in their teens, he simply would not be a part of the team. It has dominated a lot of the press coverage, and I'm not sure that, you know, people are overly satisfied with how the Dutch Federation have handled it, but he is here, and until he makes a decision to leave, or unless the Dutch Federation make a decision to have him removed from their team, I don't think it's a story that's going to go away.
Can we return to Argentina and Morocco and how it ended? Well, sorry, you need to kind of just take us through what happened there.
So with the opening day of soccer yesterday, and you know, we've mentioned these matches are taking place up and down the length and breadth of France. So we had 15 minutes of stoppage time announced for the game. Morocco were in control, and basically a goal is scored, and deep 16 minutes into stoppage time by the time the goal was scored. Obviously the Moroccan fans, who thought they were home and hosed, didn't react very well to all of this excessive extra time and the fact that the goal was scored. Items rained down onto the pitch. There was a pitch invasion in some quarters. The referee, who in his mindset had 3 minutes of the game still to play, removed the players from the pitch. Obviously security and everything else had to step in to remove the pitch invasion. Eventually it got to the stage where it wasn't that the game had been abandoned. The game had basically been, you know, paused, had been halted. The players are brought back out onto the field after, I think it was nearly a 2 hour break in play. The goal, which had been given to Argentina to level the game, was subsequently ruled out as a result of VAR. And then they played the remainder of the game in an empty stadium, having removed all of the fans and spectators from the area. So it was a far from glorious start to the opening day of the football competition.
No, not much evidence of the Olympic spirit in play there. And I didn't realise that, I mean, there were riot police that were deployed nearby here. Is that the case at all venues in this Olympics?
There's riot police everywhere. Like, and I don't think that's exclusive to Paris. Like, I you know, obviously Tokyo was a very different experience for those of us that were here, because there were no spectators. So obviously the numbers of people that they were dealing with were significantly reduced. Like, I have memories of going to events in Rio and driving through very heavily armed military barricades, and like, again, I might sound like a broken record over the course of the week, but I think if you're to walk for 10 or 15 minutes around anywhere in Paris, you are going to meet large groups of army officers. You're going to meet very heavily armed large groups of army officers, and you are going to be reminded very, very quickly that this is a very, very significant military operation. And again, like we've touched upon, there's full airport style security before you enter the venues. And yeah, listen, it's just going to be part and parcel. If you are coming to these games, you are going to see a very heavy military presence and a very heavy security presence, and that is just the nature of an event like this.
All right, this kind of funny, phony war period without any real sporting action to talk about pretty much is, well, no, sorry, it's going to go on for another day now, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's going to change slightly, because you're going to have the Irish flag bearers for the opening ceremony set to be named, which will generate a little bit of excitement there. The opening ceremony tomorrow, I think, for people that are going to watch it, is going to be, if they can pull it off, a spectacle unlike any that we've ever seen before. So I think we're very quickly going to turn into sports mode. And listen, we are in that.
Saturday sounds like an absolutely crazy schedule for us.
Like, Saturday is like rowing, swimming, I'm going to forget the sports now off the top of my head.
Boxing.
Potentially, based on the draw, takes place tonight, based on the draw. You know, like the rugby sevens potentially could be medalists come close of business. We've got show jumping, equestrian sports. They're outside the window doing charades at me to try and remind me of some of the sports that are involved, which I'll tell you, that is the highlight of my Olympics so far. But we are into that stage where I think we counted in excess of 30 Irish athletes could be in action across the day on Saturday. And listen, that's the reason we're here. And you know,
I want to see the charade for modern pentathlon.
They haven't quite got that far yet, but there's three people in the control room looking in the window at me, so I'm waiting for them to... That could be our afternoon activity. Listen, we have talked about it before, that, like, I've used the same cliche time and time again, that the greatest pleasure that this job presents us with is the opportunity to bring you stories of Irish success on the international stage. And, like, it is just... We are going to hit the ground running from Saturday onwards, and there's going to be heartbreak, and there's going to be disappointment, and there's going to be euphoria, and there's going to be people and stories that will surprise us, and there's going to be people who will be household names come the 11th of August that a lot of people may not be familiar with now. And it is the beauty of the Olympics. And you do get that sense over the course of the week that, you know, having arrived on Monday, you're kind of in that purgatory period for a couple of days of running around getting little bits of content here, and it started but it's not really started.
And you're going to have an abundance of them come Saturday
yeah,
afternoon.
But you could sense it yesterday. Even like I've been lucky enough to be at the Stade de France for Irish Six Nations games, and I have never in my life experienced the Stade de France as loud and as vocal as it was when they, like, it's all part of the showbiz of it. There's DJs performing music, and they play music during the breaks and play, as is the sevens, but they have this big build up to the teams emerging out of the tunnel. And when France, and particularly DuPont, landed out of the tunnel, it was, the roof came off the place. So I think people
are
up for
well.
I think people are up for it, and I think it's going to be exciting from Saturday onwards.
Damien, thank you very much. Coming up after the break, can there be any such thing as healthy snacking?
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.